Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Live. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
On a Tuesday night, here we go. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. I've got you for the next 2 hours. We take you till 8 o'clock tonight. We have a very busy program on the way. In about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Chris Cotillo. Chris is a Red Sox beat writer for MassLive.com, and we'll get his thoughts on the Sonny Gray trade today, and more specifically, what he thought about what the Cardinals are getting in return for Sonny Gray. We'll talk some hockey, our weekly conversation with Hockey Amy. Amy Markscorse is going to join us at 6:35. Next hour, we'll talk with Corey Miller from Channel 5. We'll get his thoughts on the Sonny Gray trade. We'll talk some Mizzou with him as well. And then, as mentioned earlier today, and you've heard some of the audio here on the station, and we ran some of the press conference when it was actually taking place. But Chaim Bloom did meet with the assembled media today, and we're going to go back through some of what he had to say and play a good number of those cuts. That's going to happen at about 7:30 or so. As always, if you want to chime in on what we're talking about, multiple ways to get connected with the program, you can call or text 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. And for those of you who are watching on the video stream, we welcome your phone calls and, we welcome your messages via the video stream. You can certainly do that as we take you through the course of the next 2 hours. So let's start with my thoughts on what went down today. It had become abundantly clear recently that the Cardinals were likely to move on from Sonny Gray. Gray was ready to go pitch for a team that was in more of a win-now moment, and he had a large salary connected to him. And if the Cardinals could trade him, get a good return, and get out from some of that money, that was something that could expedite the process that the Cardinals are currently going through to get back to where they want to be. And from a financial standpoint, you can look at it from two separate ways. You can look at it as they're picking up $20 million of his salary for the upcoming season. So they are paying him, they're giving him $20 million, and he's not going to pitch for the Cardinals. For the people out there who are very critical of the Cardinals about their willingness to eat money, well, they're eating $20 million. Now, that's talking out of one side of the mouth. Talking out of the other side of the mouth is they're also saving $20 million. Yeah, they're not. Sonny Gray isn't a member of the Cardinals. But they're getting out from underneath the other $20 million there. So you can look at it either way for sure, but the Cardinals are not exactly known as a team that eat a lot of money that go pay players to go play for another team, and that's what they're doing with Gray. They're picking up $20 million. And I think, I don't know what the market was for Gray. I assume that there were a number of suitors out there. And I even think that if they would have waited longer, maybe some other things could have potentially developed, but I would assume that the Cardinals' willingness to pick up that money allowed them to get a better return. And we need to put everything in perspective when it comes to return. We're living right now in a world of misinformation, and there is so much misinformation out there right now when it comes to what the market value is for players who the Cardinals might trade. Like, I'm seeing some of the stuff out here connected to what the Cardinals could get for a Brendan Donovan. And I think Donovan is an incredibly valuable player that the Cardinals are going to get some really, really nice pieces for. But some of the stuff I see on social media, and I'd love to be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll be the first person to yell and scream and raise my hand and say that I was wrong. But I look at all the various social media stuff out there assessing Donovan's value as being able to go get a really high level, can't miss type prospect, a guy who's going to be able to garner an organization's top or second best prospect in the organization, a guy who's going to get get you a top 50 prospect in all of baseball, things like that. It's not going to happen. Maybe Donovan gets you a top 100 guy towards the end of the top 100. Maybe. But even that might be a bit of a stretch. So what are the Cardinals trying to do here? What's Heim Bloom trying to do here as he goes through this offseason where we assume there's going to still be more moves to be made? And I think you can kind of take the Nolan Arenado move and just put that off to the side. Moving on from Arenado, much as was the case last year. Moving on from Arenado, it's not so much about what you're going to get back for Arenado. It's about getting him to a better situation where this team can move forward with him not being on the roster anymore. But when it comes to anybody else that they might trade, when it comes to Brendan Donovan, when it comes to Alec Burleson, when it comes to Lars Nootbaar, when it comes to Nolan Gorman, when it comes to Pedro Pajes, when it comes to Jojo Romero, those are just some of the names that have been connected to, have been rumored to be on the trading block. When it comes to any of those guys, the idea is to maximize value in what you're getting back. And the Cardinals feel like they did that. In Richard Fitz, who is someone who is still very young in his big league career, he has had some good moments in his career. He has appeared in 15 major league games, 14 starts. Of his 14 starts, he's given up three or fewer earned runs in 11 of them. So he certainly has had some success. He's also dealt with some injury issues as he's gone through. And then Brandon Clark, he throws hard. He's a left-hander. And over his minor league career, he has 60 strikeouts over 38 innings pitched. They would like to see him as a starter, no guarantee of that. There is still some wildness that goes along with him as well. 27 walks in the 38 innings at the minor league level. So you keep going and getting these type of guys. And this is a perfect trade for the Cardinals because you get somebody who's going to be able to help you at the big league level in Fitz. And you would think that he's going to be slotted into the major league rotation. I think the only 100% guarantees, barring injury, that are going to be in the rotation pretty much no matter what are Michael McGreevy and Matthew Liberatore. But then that next group of probably in the rotation, I would put Fitz in there. I think he likely walks into spring training with a spot in the rotation that, while it's not an ironclad guarantee he's going to be in there, he is likely to stay in there. So you get somebody who's going to be able to help you at the major league level, who you also have club control on for a good number of years. He is controllable. That is something that the Cardinals very much want to have. They want to have controllable pitching. You get that in Fitz. And then you've got a guy who has an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly high ceiling in Brandon Clark. Now, just because somebody has an incredible ceiling doesn't mean they're going to reach it. And we have to be ready as people who want to see the Cardinals do well. We have to be ready to accept the fact that there's going to be moves made, and some of them are going to work, and some of them are not going to work. But if you go out, if you're Heim Bloom, and you keep going out, and you keep acquiring pieces that, if they hit their ceiling, are doing the things that you really want to see done from a pitching standpoint, going and getting hard throwers who get swing and miss, if you're bringing in position players, guys who hit the ball hard and over the wall and hit home runs, if you keep getting a bunch of guys like that and you hit on a few of them, then that's what's going to eventually result in the team improving their roster from the top up. Because that's where the Cardinals' problem exists right now. The Cardinals' best player is not good enough to be the Cardinals' best player. And this is not a shot at whoever they might be. There are a lot of players on the Cardinals' roster who I like a lot and who I think can be part of teams that win a lot. But they can't be part of teams that win a lot if they are going to be the best player on the team. So the Cardinals need to find a way to bring in players who will eventually become the best players on the team. And somebody like a Brandon Clark, no guarantee he reaches his potential, but if he does reach his potential, that is a dangerous, dangerous proposition in your rotation. It's years down the road, but it's the possibility of super high-end talent, which is something that they are still very much looking for. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. For those of you watching the video stream, you can leave a comment. We will take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Cotillo. He covers the Red Sox for Mass Live. He joins us in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
This is Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, continuing to talk about the news of the day. The first major move made by the Cardinals since Chaim Bloom taking over as the president of baseball operations. He does a little business with his former team as he sends Sonny Gray to Boston, getting back a couple young pitchers. Richard Fitz, who's been in the big leagues really for this past season for his first extended look there. And then Brandon Clark, who pitched at the single A level. Very happy to welcome onto the program. He covers the Red Sox as a beat writer for Mass Live. He is Chris Cotillo. You follow him on Twitter at Chris, C-O-T-I-L-L-O. Chris, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
I'm good. Busy day. How are you?
I'm good as well. What's been the kind of the Boston reaction to this move where Gray comes in and seemingly slots in as the number two starter in the Red Sox rotation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is, you know, the headline that they went and got and made an aggressive move for a rotation piece at this point. You know, it's no secret what they need. They needed a veteran starter to put alongside Crochet and a power bat to put in the middle of the lineup, you know, not just to replace Bregman's production if he goes elsewhere, but to, you know, exceed it. So I think people were expecting a little bit higher of a target, whether it be a Joe Ryan or a Hunter Green or Mackenzie Gore, Framber Valdez, Dylan Cease, the list goes on and on. Obviously, none of those guys have moved. And so I think here a little bit underwhelmed by Sonny Gray, just as a guy who, you know, you don't think of Sonny Gray, and people in St. Louis would know this better than us, obviously, but like you don't think of Sonny Gray at age 36 as a guy who is a 1B to Crochet or a guy who is even a number two. The early indications I'm getting is that, you know, the Red Sox are comfortable with this being their big off-season addition, obviously. There's a lot of time, a big off-season pitching addition. Obviously, there's a lot of time before spring training. But, you know, it's not the type of thing where they look at it and, you know, are going to slot him into the number four spot. So I think a little surprised, a little underwhelmed from the fan base just because, you know, why do that on November 25th when the market's not settled? To me, it also speaks to the fact that, you know, they really wanted this guy. Obviously, the expected numbers last year were really good, better than, you know, the ERA and some of the back of the baseball card things you'd look at. But I think, you know, obviously people always are in the pipe dream world of, you know, Scooble, right? But yeah. Joe Ryan, at least, or some of those guys. I think this was a name that maybe was in the next tier down. And if that's it in terms of their number two, I think people are going to walk away with it underwhelmed.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag on Gray at a 4.28 ERA. But like you said, the expected number's better. I think his fielding independent was around 3.5 or so. Strikes out a bunch of guys. His strikeout to walk ratio is one of the best in the big leagues, but also gives up a lot of home runs. So no matter what side of the line you stand on, you can make the argument for or against Gray, basically using all those numbers that we just referenced.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've obviously had to do their homework. You know, when you think of Sonny Gray as a Red Sox fan, you think of a guy who, you know, was not a good fit in a huge market in New York, and I think that was very well publicized. It feels like forever ago. He's been on, you know, three or four different teams since then, but, you know, obviously reinvented his career, had a great, great season in Minnesota, a couple solid ones in St. Louis. You know, eight years later, is he more equipped to take on the huge market in the Northeast? I think they're hoping that. You know, obviously a lot's changed in that time, but that's another, I think, concern. And again, to me, you know, this is kind of too inside Red Sox probably for a St. Louis audience, but I was setting the bar heading into the offseason as someone who's better than Brian Bello, who was their number two for most of the year, along with Giolito, who was a free agent. And I don't know that Gray hits that mark right now. And I do think they gave up a lot, which I'm sure we'll get to as well.
Yeah, let's get to that right now. So let's go to an alternate universe where they do not trade Richard Fitz and he is in line to be in the rotation for the Red Sox next season. If somebody would have come to you in that situation and said, what are your thoughts on Fitz as a Red Sox starter, what would you have said?
Yep, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, due to injuries in spring training last year, they had Bello and Giolito go down with some really short-term things, and they had Cutter Crawford, who led them in innings the year before, go down, and he ended up missing the season with setbacks. So they were down three guys when camp broke, and Fitz was their number four, had a really, really good camp, and was pretty good in two or three starts to start the year, strained his pec during a start in Chicago in mid-April. After that, they kind of rushed him back because they were short on pitching in May. Instead of making a rehab start, he made an abbreviated start in the majors. He had, you know, a lot of starts and stops throughout the year. If you look at his game log, and, you know, I actually would encourage Cardinals fans to actually look at this because there's like 15 days without pitching at any level because they needed a starter in the majors, but they weren't sure if a guy was going to be available. So they scratched him from a start at Worcester, but didn't use him. But like, there's a lot of that throughout the year where he was just the sixth guy, next man up the entire time. You know, a two inning start in Milwaukee because they didn't have anybody to pitch, and they did like just a lot of weird stuff that he was in that kind of sixth man role. So I think when you look at it with that and the neuritis that cost him the last month, his innings total across the two levels wasn't very high last year. He made, you know, 10 starts in the big leagues. He got hit hard toward the end, but I think a guy that heading into the season, people were really, you know, excited about in Boston. They got him in the Verdugo trade 2 years ago. Has a lot of pure stuff. A guy that kind of had a weird season, and also from the Red Sox perspective, you know, got passed by some of these younger pitchers. Connelly Early obviously started a playoff game for them. Mm-hmm. Peyton Tolley, a top prospect, you know, kind of emerged by the end. They got Kyle Harrison in the Devers trade. He barely contributed, but he's a guy they like. They're, you know, going to have Crawford back next year healthy, Patrick Sandoval back next year healthy. So a guy that had kind of fallen down their depth chart because they do have a ton of those young, controllable back-end starters. But a guy, you know, with upside. If you look at his first, you know, six, seven major league starts, he was unbelievable and really, really good. Pitched well at AAA last year. But it's, you know, kind of turned into something that Heim never experienced when he was here, an area of depth and strength. I mean, they traded Quinn Priester the first week of April, and look what he turned into in Milwaukee. So, you know, a guy that I don't think the Red Sox wanted to give up on, but just they have other guys in that mix, and someone that, you know, I was, you know, overall, I think I was surprised by the package in total.
Should also be noted that, you know, a lot of people hear that Heim's doing business with the Red Sox. Well, these are Heim guys. They're not. Fitz and Clark came into the Red Sox organization after Heim left.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Fitz, like I said, was kind of the main prospect piece in a winter meetings trade 2 years ago that sent Verdugo to the Yankees. Obviously, those two teams don't deal very often. And then Clark was a fourth or fifth round pick in 2024 under the Breslow regime. And all Breslow has done is draft pitchers and try to develop pitchers in his 2 years here.
Brandon Clark, left-hander, throws hard, sits 97, 98, can touch 100 if you need him to. In the minor leagues, admittedly at the single-A level, tons of strikeouts, 60 strikeouts over his 38 minor league innings. Looks like a very intriguing piece, and it's somebody that I think Cardinals fans are excited about what he might turn into.
Yeah, and they should be. You know, you look at I would just completely take out his last two outings. I think he had three innings over those last two outings and got lit up because he was dealing with the blister stuff that cost him, you know, the last couple months of the season. The Red Sox are, you know, at the beginning of these guys' careers, very careful with pitchers. They've had, you know, all their college pitcher picks, of which there's been a billion of them the last 2 years, not even pitched their first year in pro ball. Peyton Tolley, for an example, didn't, and, you know, started this year, made it all the way to the majors. And so with Clark, it was, you know, the helium was crazy as of late July in terms of being a fast rising prospect. You know, I pulled an article that we had on Mass Live in the end of July, right before the deadline, and Baseball America said, there's no prospect with more helium in the game than this guy right now, from someone who was up to, at the point where his season ended prematurely, 81 in the game. And he was, you know, I think in the minds of Red Sox people, because he has struck out so many guys and had such a good stretch in April, May, and June, like their top pitching prospect ahead of Tolley and Early, two guys that were on their postseason roster when October came around. So, you know, you look at from an injury perspective, obviously blisters are annoying and everyday people, you know, the hangnail blister thing is unpleasant, but it's not an arm injury. It's not elbow. It's not, you know, any of that stuff. It's just he couldn't grip the ball. And, you know, I think as Heim alluded to on the call earlier, like he's going to be able to figure that out as he goes along. And I think this is a guy that, you know, has a tremendous ceiling, a little bit unpolished. He was a JUCO draft pick, so never faced, you know, great competition, you know, wherever, Manatee College in Florida or something like that. So he's raw in a lot of ways and unpolished, but very physical, throws 100. I was, you know, like my first reaction, seriously, when I saw the, you know, who they sent was, oh, that's a lot, you know, and that's just off the cuff and before the money was involved. And, you know, I think I understand why the Red Sox made the trade, but, and moving Clark and Fitz, these guys are guys of value. And I think Heim did pretty well to get both of them.
He is Chris Cotillo, does a great job covering the Red Sox, masslive.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris Cotillo. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time on a busy day. I believe you were the one also who broke the money part of this deal. That should be noted, the $20 million going back. So you've been all over this from the start.
That'll be in my obituary, I'm sure.
There you go. Thank you so much for the time.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That is Chris Cotillo joining us. A conversation I had with him earlier today, and we appreciate his thoughts on it. And, you know, from his standpoint, he sounds like he thought that the Red Sox gave up a lot for Sonny Gray. And just looking at social media today, it certainly feels like that a lot of Red Sox fans feel like it was a little bit of an overpay. There's some of these social media algorithms that break down things. And that's always tough, but overpay seems to be a word that's been used a lot about what the Red Sox gave up for Sonny Gray. Gray, obviously, it's not an overpay in the sense that Gray was the Cardinals' number one pitcher. And right now, there's not a lot of the rotation is not as good right now as it was when we woke up this morning. But I think we also knew that Gray was likely to get moved. All right, we're going to jump right back into baseball later on in the show. But up next, we'll switch gears. We'll talk a little hockey with Amy Markscores. She joins us in just a moment. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We do take you till 8 o'clock this evening. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line. We're mostly talking Cardinals baseball today after the Sonny Gray trade was announced earlier. We'll still hear from Corey Miller from Channel 5, and we'll also hear from Chaim Bloom. He met with the media earlier today, and we'll play back some of what he had to say later on in the program. But for now, we're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk some Blues hockey. The Blues, they have one more game to go on this five-game East Coast trip. So far, they've won just one game on Saturday. They knocked off the Islanders 2-1, but then back at last night, they lost the Rangers 3-2. Very happy to welcome somebody on that you listen to every weekday during the midday here on KMOX as part of the Chris and Amy show. Also co-hosting Offside Hockey along with Chris Kerber on Matrix Midwest. It's our good friend Hockey Amy, Amy Markscores. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
I'm all right. We have these conversations every week, and I love talking to you every week, but I always want to come up with something different to talk about. And while it was nice to see them get a win on Saturday against the Islanders, it still doesn't feel like that much has really changed for this team.
Yeah, I know. You know, when you look at the road trip so far, they have the overtime loss against Toronto, the overtime loss against Philadelphia, the win against the Islanders, the loss against the Rangers. Now, with the first three games of that road trip, they got 4 out of 6 possible points, which I think normally would be something that you're happy about, except they had leads in both of those games that ended up being overtime losses. So those first three games, in my mind, should have been 6 out of 6 possible points. The New York Rangers have had won one game at home all season.
Yeah.
They were 1-7-1 at Madison Square Garden, and you lose that game. So while, yes, the Blues have 4 points in 4 games, it does feel a bit more negative than it should, especially those first three, Matt. Giving up leads has been plaguing them since last year.
Isn't it remarkable? I know we've talked about this before, but it feels like any time there's one of those type statistics that you just mentioned, the team has won one game at home, or the team comes in on a 5-game losing streak, or the team has won, you know, lost 7 of their last 9 road. Like, whatever the scenario is, if they're facing off a team that has a negative trend, it feels like they always lose to that team.
Yeah, you're right, and I hate it when you happen to be that team, but if there's a guy who hasn't scored all season long yet, he'll get his first goal of the season against you, against the Blues. That's happened quite a few times where players who haven't scored all season are getting those goals against the Blues. Teams that are struggling have lost 5 games in a row, break their losing streak against the Blues, or who are struggling to get wins at home, get that win at home against the Blues. And that's not a good pattern to see. And to be honest, Joey Vitale brought this up several weeks ago, long before we were in the situation we're in now. And Joey Vitale said the number one thing is you can't start to adopt a victim mentality where you think things are going to go wrong. He's talking of the players now, where you just expect every bounce to go against you or every team to have their big game against you. And it would be easy for them to feel that way right now. That Islanders game, I mean, that came close. And I know Chris Kerber had said if that goalie interference hadn't happened, if the Blues had lost that game, that might have been a dagger that they couldn't have bounced or come back from.
Yeah, we're talking with Amy Markscores through her weekly conversation here on Sports Open Line, going through all things St. Louis Blues hockey. It's when the season got started, the narrative was, oh, you got to have a hot start because you play so many games at home. And then things did not go well. And then they get set for this long road trip. And the narrative was, well, this is the opportunity for the team to come together. And yes, they have gotten points in 3 of the games, as you allude to, but the trip has not gone well. They've only got 1 win on this trip. I'm not trying to just bury this team, but it feels like anytime they openly speak about what they need to do or the opportunities they need to take advantage of, they then don't follow up by actually doing it.
Yeah, no, and I think we keep shifting the narrative to try to create a situation where this trend of just losing could change. And like you said, you brought up the road trip, and it hasn't gone particularly well. And it is a condensed schedule this year. That's why there was so much focus on the beginning of the season. When you look at the Olympic break, it's really 3 full weeks that the NHL has paused, but they're still playing 82 games. So you're going to have that condensed schedule. In fact, the Blues have their game against the New Jersey Devils tomorrow night. And then this weekend, they have 3 home games in 4 days that they're going to knock out that homestand pretty quickly before they go on the road again. And, you know, Matt, I'm still holding out hope, because at the end of the day, like, I'm a Blues fan. I love Blues hockey, but it's been frustrating. So what am I holding on to? The goaltending's been better.
Yeah.
The goaltending's turning around. And in fact, there's a glass half full, glass half empty, I guess, angle to this, is that the goaltending is the reason why the Blues won that game against the Islanders. You know, it wasn't like the team pulled it together. It was a better game. But when you have Jordan Binnington standing on his head again, or Joel Hofer, you think, okay, this is good. They can steal some points for you, but you also don't want to rely solely on your goaltender stealing points. It's such a cliche, but your best players have to be your best players, and the Blues top skaters are struggling now, so much so that Jake Neighbors, who missed 12 games of the, 23, is still tied for the lead in goals on this team.
I don't know if you agree with this, Amy. I would argue the defense has been, early on in the season, teams were skating into the offensive zone against the Blues, and they immediately had a grade A opportunity to score a goal. And I don't feel like it's quite to that extreme level right now. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the goaltenders. You're right in what you say about the goalies. But I do think, while it's not major better help defensively, I do think defensively they're getting a little bit better play in front of them.
It does look like that. And I don't want to take away from them playing better. I will also say they haven't played great teams with the New York Rangers or the Philadelphia Flyers or the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they're not necessarily playing against the top offenses. Like, what does their defense look like when they take on the Colorado Avalanche, who have 16 wins, 1 loss, and 5 overtime losses? That doesn't even sound possible right now. They have 1 regulation loss this year. So, you know, what does it look like? What does it look like when they face the Stars, the Wild, the Mammoth, all teams in their own division? I don't know. But you're right. Hey, if you're playing a team that's struggling, exploit that. And then get your act together, right, while you're playing against teams that are struggling as well. When you listen to some of the narratives around the Toronto Maple Leafs and what they're going through, I mean, a lot of the conversations, you know, you hear about the Blues. You know, Craig Berube is not happy with his team's play right now with the Maple Leafs. And so, yeah, the Blues were playing another team that was struggling, but the only thing that matters is getting points.
What's remarkable in this whole thing is, like, Toronto, they've got 21 points this year. It is terrible. They're the worst team on the eastern side of things. They are 5 points out of a playoff spot. Boston is the final wild card spot with 26 points. So the worst team in the East is 5 points out of a playoff spot. The Blues with 20 points right now. They are 7 points out of a playoff spot. 7 points can be made up in 3 weeks, especially. So it's incredible, because the league right now is so top heavy, Amy, and there's so many middling teams that if any team decides that they're going to win a bunch of games in a row, they're right there where they need to be.
They are. No, I think that's a good point, because, like I said, my negative point was that the Blues struggled against the Flyers, the Maple Leafs, and the Rangers, and both the Rangers and the Maple Leafs are last place in their division. But you're right, there is a lot of, there's an opportunity for these middle teams to make a push. I'm okay with that right now, because I feel like, yes, if the Blues can get it together, I think with this team, We saw what happened at the end of last season, and it was a lot of the same core players. Now, you did lose some veterans for sure, and I think that's maybe what we're seeing is you lost some of those guys that were great in the locker room, just that veteran presence, but you still got that core. So what if just a couple guys could get hot? What if just a couple guys somehow, for whatever reason, had the hot stick, had a couple of good games, and could pull some of their teammates or line mates along with them? I do think that would happen. I think once Buchnevich, for instance, can crack through, he's had some chances. He hit the crossbar that last game from a shot by Logan Mayhew, by the way, who's also trying to make his way in this league. I think if you can get a guy like Buchnevich to get back on board, you're going to see some points pile up for the Blues. You're going to see some wins, but it's really tough to win when your top six are struggling.
Amy Markscores, co-host of Chris and Amy, middays here on KMOX, also co-hosting Offside Hockey alongside of Chris Kerber on Matrix Midwest, airs Wednesday nights. You can always catch the replay as well. Amy, thank you so much for the time. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Matt. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, too.
Awesome. Appreciate it. That's Amy Markscores, Hockey Amy, joining us here on the show. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. Hour number two, Corey Miller is going to join us. We'll also hear some of what Heim Bloom had to say earlier today. That's all coming up. Don't go anywhere. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Wrapping up hour number one of the program, it is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Look, I've talked a lot about it recently, and we got a comment earlier that came in saying that the ceiling talk is old, and that's when talk about the Cardinals and what they might get back and how it is all about looking at players and their ceilings and trying to hit on as many of those as possible. If that talk is old, well, that's the pathway here. That's the pathway. Because the Cardinals are not going to go right now acquire in free agency any big-time, impactful, all-star caliber, top-of-the-roster type players. And long-term, they want to have those top-of-the-roster guys. You do that by identifying the skill sets to be an impactful player, and you go get as many of those guys as you possibly can and hope some of them develop. So if you're sick of hearing about a guy's ceiling, I don't know what to tell you, because that's going to be something that we are going to continue to talk about moving forward. Back with more in a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll into hour number two of the program. We've got a lot coming up this hour, including hearing much of what Heim Bloom had to say in his press conference today via Zoom, talking about the trade that was made. Sonny Gray going to Boston, a couple pitchers coming back. Right now, very happy to welcome on to the show. He is a reporter and anchor for Channel 5 KSDK. He's our good friend, Corey Miller, joins us right now. Corey, I always appreciate you taking time with us. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news today with the trade? Sonny Gray goes to Boston and a couple young pitchers, one of whom will likely slot into the big league rotation this upcoming season, returning to St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's too surprised just in general that it happened. I think that it came so soon is a little bit surprising and perhaps signals just how aggressive Heim Bloom is going to be this offseason, you know, unloading some guys who do have some value around the league. With anything like pitchers you get, you'll see how it works out. One of them's got some experience. The other, at least at one point, I think was a pretty highly touted prospect. Lefty throws pretty hard. So you got to take a gamble getting some younger guys, and who knows if it's going to work out. But on a team that doesn't really look like it's going to compete very much next year, it didn't make a whole lot of sense to have Sonny Gray on the roster. So the teardown begins, I guess.
Yeah, Heim talked about today about the art form that is figuring out when to actually pull off trades. And if you do it early, well, then maybe there's a lot of teams that are interested in a certain position group. If you do it late, where a bunch of guys come off the board, maybe you get some desperation. He went early on this one. He also talked about the fact that for Sonny's sake, just allowing him to know where he was going to be and not be stressing out right at the beginning of spring training, everything played into it as well. But I think your point is right, Corey, that the moment a trade becomes something that he's content and happy with, it feels like he's likely to pull the trigger.
I think he also might have said today it's not really about – he doesn't view it as patience. He views it as like being aggressive to start this process and what guys are going to be a part of this process. And like we've been talking about, if it's going to be, you know, a couple years or two before you get where you want to go, does it make sense to have some of these high-priced veterans on your team? Well, no, it doesn't. So then let's get to going right away. You know, this is just the first domino, and them including, you know, the amount of money they did in this deal, I guess $20 million I saw reported, maybe bodes well to think they could definitely move Arenado this offseason and include some money there, which maybe was a hang up before, but yeah, just the start.
Yeah, that's kind of the cost of doing business in today's Major League Baseball, where when all of a sudden contracts don't look great anymore, you have to eat them to have players go away. And again, you make a good point because we're waiting to see what's going to happen with Nolan Arenado. And if them eating $20 million of Sonny Gray's salary is an indication of things to come, you would think it might be easier to get an Arenado deal done.
It just has to at this point. I don't, whatever they have to do, like it, he can't be on the team next year at this point. It's just such a crux of just, it doesn't make sense for him to be here anymore. He said all the right things, of course, that everybody's gone about it the right way, but just from a logical perspective, it does not make any sense for Nolan Arenado to be a Cardinal next year. And, you know, he's even come around to the fact that he'll have to open his mind maybe a little bit and look at other teams that might be in the mix for him, even though if they weren't his first, second, or third option. But, yeah, I just don't see a world where he's on the roster next year, whatever they have to do.
Yeah, look, Sonny Gray's gone, and Sonny Gray was your best pitcher in the rotation. And I'm not trying to put a lipstick on a pig here because the rotation is not as good right now as it was this morning. At the same time, a lot of people have said, isn't this a team that can still contend for a playoff spot? And I think you can squint and still fight. You know, if Richard Fitz comes in and does a really nice job and takes a step forward, if you get a little bit more offensively from some guys out there, if they make some key moves and get the most out of things, like, just because I'm not trying to sell this as this team is going to be really good next year, it's not a rebuild that they're going through, but at the same time, it feels like there's at least a scenario where it kind of plays out the way it did this year, where you're at least in playoff contention for most of the year.
Well, I think this is just the first of a lot of things that are going to happen. And I don't think all of them are going to be, you know, tearing things down to the studs. I think if they see a situation where they can acquire via trade or to sign somebody who's established at least a little bit and projects to the future, most importantly, but could be good right now. Yeah, certainly, you know, you plug a couple holes and you're at least probably as good as you were this last year. And, you know, the toughest thing I've just been saying about all this, just as a kind of a wide scoping issue, is we've been kind of waiting around the last couple of years for this to turn around. It hasn't. And now it feels like you've reached another low point where you're going to go even lower, even though fans have already kind of suffered through this for a couple years. So, like, what do you pitch to people to come out? So I think they are going to find, you know, some way to pitch that. And I think Heim's going to make some trades and moves, not just focused on long down the future, but you got to field a competitive team at least somewhat in St. Louis.
Before we get you out of here, I want to talk Mizzou for just a moment. Your colleague Frank Cusimano tweeted out a couple hours ago that he was told by people close to the situation that the board of curators and coach Eli Drinkwitz are getting close to finalizing the deal. It could come by the end of the week. There is a curators meeting that has been scheduled for tomorrow that is notable. Generally, you don't have a meeting like that happening the day before Thanksgiving. Do you feel like this is moving towards the direction of Drinkwitz getting another contract extension and locking in for at least one more year?
Yeah, I think that's just the reality of college football today. If you're not, you know, going out of your way to appease your guy is going to really seriously to look in somewhere else. And who knows, you know, everything online and drink shot somewhat shot it down, maybe not as forcefully as folks would like to hear from him. And, you know, the recent weeks, it's all about leverage and whatnot, of how hard other programs were after him. Who really knows? But you've got a guy who can recruit, who can manage the portal beautifully, and could command the NIL, you know, powers that Mizzou has at the moment very well to compete in the SEC. To think you could do better than that and start all over is pretty foolish. So I think locking Drink up with what he needs is certainly the best course of action. And hopefully one of these years you figure it out and you're able to knock off a couple of teams that you weren't supposed to beat. And that just seems to be the reality of the situation.
You know, previously, if you go get a contract extension, that maybe locks you in for a couple, 2-3 years. But it feels like in today's world of college football, we could be having the exact same conversation, and the board of curators could be having the exact same meeting 1 year from now. All these contract extensions seemingly do is lock in a coach for one more single year.
Oh yeah, put as many years on there as you want. It doesn't matter. If they want to get rid of you and they've got the money, they'll get rid of you to get somebody else, or you're going to leave and go somewhere else and bail them out. So yeah, it's all just give them what they want and we'll figure it out later, I think, is kind of the operation.
Do you think it's a valid criticism of him, of the program's lack of ability to knock off top 25 teams?
Yeah, I think it's fair. The record is what it is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, every game, almost every game he's supposed to win, he's won. And at Mizzou, in the SEC, the best conference in the country, that's nothing to scoff at. You obviously wish you could take it to some of these bigger teams every year. It just hasn't worked out. But you look at everything surrounding the program, like I mentioned, with certainly the transfer portal and high school recruiting. And he's getting the horses. Just got to figure out how to make those horses win the big game. And I think you keep taking your shots with him.
A couple years ago, if the college football playoff would have been expanded where it is now, they would have been a college football playoff team. If they just stay on this exact same track record that they've had for the last few years, where your basement is being an 8-win team, which is what they're likely going to be this year, maybe 9 wins with a bowl game, and the ceiling is getting into those double-digit wins and being right there in college football playoff contention, is that enough for you to feel comfortable with sticking with a guy year after year after year? Or can Mizzou fans ask for more than that?
That's a fair question, and you know, I'm an alum. I got a diploma hanging up here in my house, so I try to not be totally delusional about it. And every once in a while, I'm like, why can't Mizzou be, you know, competing at the highest level? And then you kind of look at the big picture, and to be a team within, you know, striking distance of the college football playoff is not a bad place to be. It's a place that, you know, in the mid 2010s, if there was a college football playoff and you would have told me Mizzou was in striking distance under Barry Odom, I would have thought that was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. So it's a little bit about perspective. And like I said, you just got to come together one of these years. And at some point, there'll be a hard discussion, possibly, if it just keeps coming up short and he gets the James Franklin kind of shade on him that folks up at Penn State thought about him. I don't think we're there yet, though. So I think Mizzou fans should still like the track that Eli's got him on.
He is Corey Miller. You see him on Channel 5 KSDK. He is a sports reporter and sports anchor. You follow him on Twitter at Corey_Miller5. Corey, thanks for the time. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up again down the line.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Awesome. Very good. That's Corey Miller joining us on the program, and we appreciate him spending a few moments with us today and getting his thoughts on the Cardinals' move today and also on Mizzou. And it's looking, again, there's a board of curators meeting tomorrow. This is, we do the thing with the college. The world goes crazy when it comes to following along with the college football coaching carousel. You've got all the message board people. You got the people getting on the aviation websites and tracking planes from one city to another. Like, and more often than not, it's nothing. It's just a whole bunch of nothing. I'm not trying to add fuel to a fire of what could potentially be nothing, But I think the board of curators calling a meeting the day before Thanksgiving, that's odd. That's weird. It's the day before Thanksgiving. It's when holidays are getting underway and when people are not working and the board of curators are calling a meeting. So I feel like there is a good, and I have no inside information on this. Again, I mentioned the Frank Cusimano tweet where he mentioned the fact that maybe a deal could be done by the end of the week. I don't know. But I just, it to me, that's not nothing that the board of curators are getting together on the day before Thanksgiving. And we'll see how that all ends up playing out. We'll take a break right now. And when we return, we'll jump back into our thoughts on the Sonny Gray trade. Again, if you've got anything that you want to get in, we'll have a little bit of time for some comments. You can text in at 314-436-7900. Have some video comments that have come in as well. We'll try to get to some of those coming up in just a moment as well. Don't go anywhere. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at as we take you till 8 o'clock this evening on a Graybar Sports Open Line. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, we are going to go back through much of what was said today by Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, Heim Bloom, after the announcement of the Sonny Gray trade. Heim spent some time on a Zoom call with members of the media, and we're going to play back much of those, and we'll kind of put some context to what was said as well. So that's going to be coming up in just a few minutes. Programming note for you, we are on tomorrow, Thanksgiving Eve, tomorrow evening. We will be doing a full show. Just with everything happening today, where it's been a lot of reacting to the trade and just going through all the details and the information of it. Haven't had quite as much time as I would have liked to be able to welcome in your phone calls and your messages and all that sort of stuff, because I want to get to this. I want to listen back to what some of Heim had to say coming up in our next segment. So hopefully you'll be with me tomorrow and I'll be able to spend a little bit more time than we did today. Got a few messages I want to get through right now. 636 texts in and says, I know the Cardinals are rebuilding, but could the Cardinals still sneak into the playoffs next season? I think the answer to that question is yes, but I don't want to answer the question that way as if that's the goal of next season. They could have snuck into the playoffs this year, right? It would not have taken much to go differently for them to be in a different spot. If they would have cut the cord on Eric Fetty a little bit earlier, if there's a handful of losses that you really kind of just were not games that should have been wins, all of a sudden this team is in a different spot. Maybe they're not selling at the deadline. Like they didn't. It isn't that they had to be a better team this year. It's just that some things would have had to go differently. And is there a scenario? Because I think the team is going to be basically the same level of talent next year. Now, they're not going to have a Sonny Gray. I get that. Their top-end pitcher, their highest-end pitcher, will likely be less than what they had this year. But there's also going to be some areas where guys do take steps forward. Is there a scenario where this club sneaks into the playoffs this upcoming season? Sure. But is there a scenario where they win a division? Is there a scenario where they go on a deep playoff run? Is there a scenario where they win a World Series? No, there's not. And what they have spoken very openly about, which I think is a really good thing that they're saying, is it's not this is a team that's no longer, the job isn't to be in the middle anymore. The job is to go position themselves where they can win championships, where they can be division champions, where they can be league champions. And the good Lord willing, they could be world champions at some point in the future as well. And that's the path that they're trying to get themselves on. So I've always told you, and I'm not backtracking out of this. I've always told you that there's always value in being a playoff club. And there's always value in contending for the playoffs. And I stand by that. If something happens this upcoming season where things play out just a little bit differently and they win a higher percentage of those games that they should win, if some guys take a step forward, if some of these things happen, and a scenario like what happened this year with the Mets where they just completely fell off and it's the Cardinals and not the Cincinnati Reds who take advantage of that moment, if that plays out, that's great. And that's not out of the realm of possibility, but that doesn't change what this team is trying to do And they're not trying to be a team that can sneak into the playoffs. They're trying to be a team that can win championships. And I call me a honk, call me a homer, call me whatever you want to call me. I believe in Heim Bloom. I believe that he's making the right decisions. And I believe in bringing in as much young talent as possible, hoping that a lot of it starts to hit and you're able to raise your base level of talent on the major league roster. And that eventually turns into an opportunity to be competing again at the highest level. We will hear from Heim Bloom. He spoke with the media earlier today. Some of what he had to say, that's coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. Just something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. We've obviously been spending most of our time today talking through the big move today as the Cardinals trade away pitcher Sonny Gray. They get back left-hand pitcher Richard Fitz. He was in the big leagues this past season, but a guy who's still relatively young. Cardinals have some club control on him. And then left-hand pitcher Brandon Clark, a young prospect. According to MLB Pipeline, he slots in as the number 7 prospect in the Cardinals organization coming over from the Red Sox. We did hear from Cardinals President of Baseball Operations Heim Bloom earlier today. If you missed any of it, I wanted to play back much of what he did have to say. And before we get to the return, let's start with his comments on Sonny Gray, who was a big part of this team. Obviously, the number one pitcher, the top of the rotation guy for the Cardinals each of the last 2 years. And Bloom made it very clear that he felt like that Sonny was a very good Cardinal.
Just express some appreciation for Sonny and what he did in our uniform. Getting to know him these past couple of years has been a pleasure. And obviously watching him pitch is, you all and all of our fans have, also a pleasure. But what he did on the field, who he is off the field, his dedication to his craft. There's not that many guys I've been around who are as much fun to talk pitching with as Sonny is. And what he did for the people around him, how much he cares about this game and how seriously he took the commitment that he made to this organization, something that we all appreciate and wish him well in Boston.
I mentioned the return that they are getting in a young guy in Brandon Clark, again, top 10 prospect now in the Cardinals organization. And then Richard Fitz, who would seemingly slot in to the major league rotation right away after he appeared in 11 big league games this past year, making 10 starts. And Bloom, as he went on to talk about things, said he's very happy with the return that they got.
Really excited about both of those players. Fitz has big league experience and has what it takes to pitch in a big league rotation. Clark is still in the minor leagues, still on his way up. An up-and-comer with a lot of promise.
Now, something that's been spoken about a lot recently is where the organization is going and how they are going to get there, and they are more than willing to maybe take a step back in the short term to have a bigger step forward in the long term, and Bloom said that this type of trade represents what the organization is trying to do.
To me, it's exactly consistent with everything that I've been talking about for the past couple months. I laid this out when I spoke to you guys for the first time in late September. we have somewhere we need to go. We're not there now. And the way to get there is through building on our core of talent and having promising young talent that can be with us for many years and that have their best ahead of them, we hope. And so, you know, we talked about it, that sometimes the long term might conflict with the short term. Sonny's a really talented pitcher. There's no doubt about that. But I said it then, I'm going to say it again. When those two things run in opposite directions, we're going to choose the long term because that's where this organization needs to be. We're trying to get back to a certain place and stay there. And history has shown that the way the Cardinals always do that is with our young, talented core. So we're trying to build on that core and excited about these two guys and what they're going to mean for us as part of that.
And Bloom goes on to say that moves like these get the club closer to where he feels like they need to be.
Nobody who gets in this game has any guarantees. I think the more fully we commit to what we need to do, the better it will go and the quicker we will get there. I don't view this as something that's about patience. I view it as something that we have to attack with purpose. We have to attack it with urgency, and we have to do that every day. There are elements of our strategy that just make sense for those to be long term, but that doesn't mean we're going to be complacent, and that doesn't mean we're going to sit on our hands. We're going to do things every day, whether they're things behind the curtain that people can't see to try to get us there. And sometimes, like today, we do something that is very visible, but we are doing it because we think it's going to get us where we need to go as quickly and as effectively as possible and put us in position to stay there.
You know, one of the interesting things about this trade is you get somebody who can slot onto the major league roster right away, but is also, as I mentioned, still a relatively young guy and someone you have club control on for a number of years. And then they also get somebody who was pitching in single A this past year. So Bloom really liked the fact that in this trade, they were able to get a now piece that is controllable and also a future piece as well.
We do end up getting in this trade someone who we feel is equipped to compete for a big league rotation spot right away and who we also have a long runway with going forward. And then obviously in Clark, you get somebody who's pure arm talent up there with just about anybody that's pitching in the minor leagues right now. Obviously, it's a long way from that to establishing himself in the big leagues, but the upside is incredible there, and we're hopeful we can help him reach it. We do, you know, when it comes to putting together our big league club, as you know, we want to make sure we have rotation depth, and so it's very nice to get talent back that fits that, but we also would never want to walk by talent that, even though it's a little further away, has a chance to really impact us in the long term. And it's nice that we're able to get some of both in this deal.
There is so much focus on the future, and rightfully so. When you trade away your top starter, your number one starter, it feels like you're giving something away at the major league level for right now. But Bloom did say they're not giving anything, they're not conceding anything, and while the deal might be focused on the future, they're hopeful it can help the current club as well.
We are not going to concede anything, obviously. Feel that we've gotten some really talented players back and look forward to adding more talent to the club, and we will do that as the winter goes on. But we also need to follow our plan. And like I said, the more we're committed to that, the more we follow it, the better this will go, and the quicker the good things that we're looking to happen will happen. So, you know, it's too early to know what other possibilities could be. I mean, you never really know until you start getting into things. We are constantly talking to every club, understanding interest in our players, hunting players that we have interest in, whether they're younger players, whether they're players in the middle of their career or older players, and obviously also talking to free agents at the same time. So I don't know exactly what those possibilities will look like or whether other things will be possible when it comes to the trade front. It obviously takes multiple partners. But we're going to keep talking and keep looking for things that can help get us where we want to go.
I thought this was interesting. We're still early on in the offseason. It seems like the offseason is likely to be a somewhat slow-moving offseason. The market for starting pitching hasn't completely developed, so why make this move now?
There's always a little bit of art to that, right, of figuring out when it's time to pull the trigger. And ultimately, there's some subjectivity around that always. It just became clear coming out of the GM meetings. We had a pretty good idea of where the interest was and what the interest levels were. Felt like this was something that might come to a head early. And especially understanding, look, for everybody's sake, Sonny has a say in this too, right? There's a no-trade clause involved. And not only is it harder for us to navigate our offseason the longer that goes on, but there's a human side to this too, where players want to prepare for spring training. And you know, I think it's easier to work through these situations when the player and his family have more runway themselves to figure out where to go. That wasn't something Sonny ever directly expressed, but just speaking generally about, you know, some of the things that go into this. But really most is just assessing the market, assessing the interest and what we might be able to get back, and then saying, look, is this something that ultimately is good for us? Like I talked about earlier, does it push us towards our goals? Does it help us get where we want to eventually go? And, you know, we felt this was a yes. And so then it's a question of, okay, is there value to waiting? Obviously, we can't play out the alternate universe where we did. But in general, I think you got to trust your instincts on this. You know, that's something you learn over time. And, you know, felt like this was a good deal for us. And so we made it.
It's also a move that requires the Cardinals to take on a fair amount of salary. They're going to pick up about $20 million to get this deal done. And Bloom said that it's kind of part of the deal. And there's two ways to look at it. Sometimes you take on salary because that's what it's going to take to get a deal done. Sometimes you take on salary because that's going to allow you to maximize the return that you get.
We're fortunate that we have the backing of ownership to be able to do that if it is the best deal for us. You'd obviously always rather not have to put cash in a deal, but if that's what's possible with the other side and that nets you the best return, then it's been great to have ownership's backing to be able to do that. And, you know, there's always a sliding scale with these things, and you assess different possibilities as you look at the market. You obviously have to factor it in because it does eat into, you know, the resources you have available to build the club in the here and now. But we thought this was the best deal available to us, and that's why we did it.
So all of a sudden, the Cardinals' rotation looks incredibly young. Really, the only two guys that you feel like are guaranteed spots going into next year are Michael McGreevy and Matthew Liberatore. Bloom said they still would like to have veterans on this team and veterans in the rotation.
We do see value regardless of, you know, whether we're building for the long haul. We still do see value in what veterans can contribute in the short term, and that's always something that you have to weigh. And sometimes those short-term effects, sometimes those short-term contributions have long-term effects, that the mentorship that veterans can provide sometimes helps young players establish themselves and be able to grow and move forward. So that is definitely something we are mindful of, something we will be mindful of as we do build this club, and I do expect us to add to this club too as the winter goes on. It's obviously still early in the offseason, but we will be able to do that.
You lose Gray, you lose your top starter. Is there a desire, does the team right now feel a need to go out and get somebody who can slot in as their new number one starter?
Definitely something we've discussed a lot as the action on Sonny picked up, and it looked like there might be some deal possibilities that made sense for us to do. We like the upside of the guys we have, and my hope is that as the winter goes on, we will be able to add more players that have a chance to pitch in rotation for a while. You know, certainly without Sonny, we lose that veteran anchor. I mean, he's one of the better pitchers in the game. He's done a lot of things. He's pitched a lot of places. He's been on all-star teams. You know, he's done a lot of things, obviously, that a lot of the guys that we have, that's all still in front of them, and that's really valuable. So, you know, certainly we will also explore veterans that could come in here and help stabilize us, not to put them in the way of any of our youth, but to make sure that we have the right insulation up and down that rotation. We want to create some competition. We want to make sure that we have options and that we allow our young guys to flourish while also making sure that that next wave that we hope is coming doesn't get pressed into service before it's their time. We want to make sure that they're ready for the highest level of baseball before we throw them in the fire. And so we will look to add to our rotation, whether it's more youth or whether it's a veteran, as the winter goes on.
And Bloom also talked through a little bit kind of the push-pull between going out and adding another veteran starting pitcher to be in this rotation, or to look at all these young guys that are going to be there and just kind of let them battle it out. You know, four, five, six guys battling for three spots, and just the how they sort of evaluate that, the need for a top guy versus allowing competition to take place in spring training.
We want to create competition with our young players. I don't think that necessarily needs to be to the exclusion of veterans. Like we talked about, there's a lot of value in some guys who've been there, done that, and can show the way. And we've seen that here the last couple of years. Competition's really good. It can bring out the best in people. Not only does it obviously give us more options to win on the field, but, you know, I've seen this in places I've been where you have a group of players. You know, I think back to all the competition that was created with some of those young pitchers a decade plus ago with the Rays. You know, it really pushes people. You can get some good things going culturally when those guys, yeah, they're competing with each other, but they know there's a lot of spots and they're really pushing each other. So it can get to a point where one guy goes out there and does something or figures something out, and then the next guy whose turn it is the next day wants to one-up them, and it becomes very healthy. So certainly if we're able to continue to add options to this group, or over time, as some of the guys that we have coming through the minor leagues come up, we hope to create that. I think it'll be great for the group, you know, I know this organization, obviously over the years, there's been an incredible starting pitching culture here that hopefully over time, as the talent warrants, we can get back to.
There are some question marks when it comes to Richard Fitz and his health, as he is somebody that has dealt with a couple issues. He did not pitch after August 25th of this past year. Bloom said that they feel very comfortable where Fitz is at from a health standpoint.
Everything that we had heard that was backed up by what we were able to see reviewing their medical information, and actually just spoke to Richard. He is back throwing. He was in Boston until last week and just went back home, and he's back throwing. And we would expect him to have a normal offseason and be ready to compete for a rotation spot in spring training. As for Brandon, obviously he's had some medical history, and most recently those blisters, which are something that some young pitchers, especially with the ability to create some of the shapes that he can create, might suffer from and have to learn to manage. Look, this is his first full pro season. That is something we're going to have to work with him to help manage as he goes forward. I think it's a byproduct of some of the very unique things he's able to do on the mound. So obviously when somebody's at this spot in their journey, there's a lot they have to learn about themselves and a lot we have to learn about them too as we get to know him. But this is a guy that our pitching team did a lot of homework on as we were discussing this acquisition, and we're going to be there to support him in a lot of different ways, whether it's what he does between the lines, what he does off the field, to make sure he has every chance to reach his potential. But he should be ready to go when spring training comes.
And then I mentioned Brandon Clark and where he's at in terms of the Cardinals' top prospects rankings. MLB Pipeline slots him in as the number 7 prospect now in the Cardinals organization. He can do a lot of things. He is a hard thrower. He's a lefty. He can touch triple digits if you really need him to. And he's somebody that Bloom is very excited to be able to watch develop.
Brandon's a really, really interesting player. A lot of credit to the Red Sox for getting him where they did in the draft and then doing a good job with him early in his pro career. Like I said, this is a guy who has, in terms of pure talent, in terms of what's coming out of his hand, the extension that he gets, it's up there with anybody that's in the minor leagues. You really could put him on that short list of highest upside, most talented pitchers in the minor leagues. What he needs to demonstrate as he goes through his career, obviously, is health, consistency, command. You know, to create some of those angles and some of the stuff that he creates, there's obviously a lot of moving parts. And I think you could see by the up and down season, obviously not all those things are in place yet, at least from our distant view. We'll obviously get to know more how he feels about it and felt about it when we get to know him and talk to him. So it's really about just putting a comprehensive plan in place on and off the field, both between the lines, in the training room, in the weight room. All the things we've been talking about, honestly, that we're trying to create in our player development system of having our performance group, our on-field group work together to get players to the best versions of themselves, that's all going to come into play here. It was great to have those groups at the table as we were talking about this. Really excited for this challenge, understanding that he is far away from that ceiling, but if we get him there, he can be elite. And this type of talent is stuff that you really can't teach. And so we're excited to put a plan around him to give him the best chance to reach that ceiling. A
couple other things just to wrap this up with Bloom. One thing that he did make very clear is there's going to be a competition for a number of rotation spots this year. There's no doubt about it. Somebody like Kyle Leahy is very much legitimately in the mix to move into a starting role this year.
We've talked about Kyle's going to stretch out and come into spring training looking to, you know, see if that's a fit, see if we can have him have as successful a transition there as Libby had this year. He certainly has a repertoire to do it. I know he wants to do it. So it makes all the sense in the world, did then, does now, to give him a chance to do that. But, you know, we're also still, of course, going to look to add.
And then the last thing from Bloom, I found this to be kind of funny because his first major move for the Cardinals involves his former team, the Boston Red Sox, and he admitted it was a little weird to do a deal with his former employer.
There were different conversations with different people in both organizations that led to this outcome. Look, it was a little strange, obviously, but at the end of the day, that doesn't really impact things. We're trying to, you know, do the best we can for our club. No matter who it's with, if we accomplish our objectives, then that doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter, you know, where I worked last or anything other than what's best for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I know they're trying to accomplish something themselves too. So this is one where you know, we each had some different objectives here that we were looking to accomplish, and we were able to match up.
That's Chaim Bloom, the Cardinals president of baseball operations, speaking on a media Zoom call earlier today. Again, the Cardinals pull off the trade as they have sent out Sonny Gray, and they get back Richard Fitz and Brandon Clark, a couple pitchers from the Boston Red Sox. We'll take another break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it, it's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Just a moment or so to go. We are going to hand things off to our Gas House Gang replay. That's going to be coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. We've spent most of the day today going through the Sonny Gray trade, and we're going to do a lot more of that coming up tomorrow as well. Didn't get the opportunity to maybe take as many phone calls today as I would have liked. I'm very interested to hear what the reaction is to this from more people, so we'll try to spend a little bit more time doing that on tomorrow's show, and we'll also try to dig in a little bit more tomorrow on the players that the Cardinals have gone back, and both Richard Fitz and Brandon Clark. So we'll try to do that coming up tomorrow in our final show before Thanksgiving. But been a fun show today, and it's this is just the beginning in the Chaim Bloom era of Cardinals baseball. I think they're going to continue to be very active, and today is a sign that shows that they are likely to continue to make a good number of moves. But that is it. We are out of time for today. We will talk to you again tomorrow for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Dianaroga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.